Órale, bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFB podcast. This is a special edition. I'm your host, Jorge Georgi Martin, and I am being joined today by a good friend, Stephen F. Cabeza, hailing all the way from South Florida. Mi buen amigo, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here. Bienvenidos and Orale. Let's go.
Well, Steve and I met back in 1992. We've been good friends ever since, even though it's a bi-coastal friendship with some plenty of trips that have come along over the years. More than a few meetings in Las Vegas and some in South Florida. Yeah. So it's been good times. It's been good times. And one of the things that we've really, we were talking last week and this kind of, for me, we thought it'd be kind of cool to bring you guys all into the conversation. We were talking a little bit about the Dolphins, Steve. How far does your fandom of the Dolphins go?
Well, I'm 53. And when I was young, on two occasions, my father brought me, may he rest in peace, brought me to Miami International Airport to welcome the returning Dolphins home as they were pursuing what would become their undefeated quest. So it goes back a long time.
Oh man, so that 17-0 team, Gary Premium, Bob Greasy, I mean that's some studs on that one. Larry Zonka. They still pop champagne when somebody when the last undefeated team loses. Isn't that great?
Yeah, and rightfully so. You know, we don't play as many regular season games, I think, as they did back then, but they used to have much longer preseason games. So I think we can agree that their padding and their technology wasn't the same. So I don't think there's any way that you can delegitimize or mitigate the success they had.
And you know, it's funny, it's, you know, not to be talking about like, you know, in the good old days and that kind of thing, but you think of how player, you know, some of the advancements in medical technology and training and things like that, and how teams, you know, just really do their best to, you know, take care of the player to get them on the field. Whereas in that era, it was like they were hitting 3-4 times a week, you know, in practice. And now it's just like, you know, they're trying. So to actually hit that point and see some of these guys that have gone on to have Hall of Fame careers when they were taking some, you know, monster hits, it's just utterly amazing. Utterly amazing.
Yeah, but I agree. It's certainly been a popular sport for forever, and the game continues to evolve. And I think, you know, whether you're an owner or just a fan, I think that it's a good thing to have the players' long-term best interests in mind.
And, you know, speaking of a long-term interest, when we started to talk about this, we really wanted to talk about Tua Tagovailoa's debut as a member of the Miami Dolphins and his NFL debut. I mean, obviously such a ballyhooed player. Alabama was just, he was a star in Alabama from the national championship game when he came in as a freshman and won the game and just came up. Looking at him, and I know you're also a big college football fan too. So I kind of looked at him and I saw a lot of Steve Young, with the left-handed and just kind of like those tight spirals. Was there any kind of comp, or what was your level of excitement once they drafted him?
Yeah, absolutely overjoyed. Now, I wasn't happy when we got rid of the guy that we pushed on to Tennessee because I thought we didn't give him enough time. But then again, it's not my money. So, you know, it's not my choice. I was very excited. You know, the quarterback is the leader of the team, unspoken leader of the team. Many teams, it's you know, very important. Watching him, you know, I can't imagine what it'd be like to be to the nerves, to your starting game under the bright lights. Even in a diminished crowd, just the pressure and the excitement. And, you know, it's nice to have the team step up around you and help you through what was otherwise a middling appearance.
You know what? That was, I know you kind of laughed at it, but, you know, it was so true. I had the thought, like, did we see enough to really get, there were flashes here and there that got you excited, but I mean, when you have a Joe Burrow and a Justin Herbert, who were also picked in the first round, come up and just, you know, they've lit the world on fire at various points. What were some of the things that you kind of saw that you know, maybe got you excited about the future?
Yeah, so tight spirals, quick feet, you know, that youthful agility. You know, it's never fun when you see your rookie quarterback get sacked, but, you know, it's to be expected. I think, you know, and you're more of an expert, you analyze it more in depth than I do, but, you know, I think it's rare when you have that rookie quarterback come in and just play flawless from day one. They need the, you know, they need the time. But, you know, if you're going to have a bad game, that was the game to have it in, where, you know, special teams and defense stood up for you and let you get your composure back. And then he managed to, you know, stub his toe to start with and jump on top of it pretty quick. That's what I saw.
And that was, and that was one of those things, like, I was really impressed where his first pass, was technically ruled a fumble because, you know, here comes Aaron Donald, all world, you know, defensive tackle, just kind of, you know, just smokes him and knocks the ball loose, but, you know, definitely kept the composure, definitely kept coming. But, you know, you mentioned what the team did around him. And that to me was what was special. You know, when the Rams left in 1995, I adopted the Dolphins as one of my two favorite teams, them and the Packers. Yeah. And so, you know, I definitely rode the wave with you all those years with some good and some not so good teams. You know, just seeing this in the second, I saw things in this game that really got me excited for, you know, for you and all the fans in South Florida who were just who've just been clamoring for a team to really rally around, you know, from the defense rushing the passer to the special teams play. What were some of the things that really kind of like knocked you out from that game?
Yeah, so I do want to make a comment on you being a fan, because I have seen you on broadcast television cheering with your face painted and your draft beer and all that stuff. So that's a fond memory. you know, I think the quarterback is probably the most elusive, notwithstanding that, you know, that first sack. The most elusive we've had in a while, and me, that's exciting. And then, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Devontae Parker. He flashes brilliance sometimes, and other times he drops a pass that you know, that SpongeBob SquarePants could catch. So you know, where he kind of stubbed his toe, looked like he recovered too. Devontae Parker did, and then to have the defense, and it was across the board, step up and really apply pressure, and now is one of the top units in the league, and then also have special teams step up. It was a full team game with the quarterback, I believe, being the sore spot. And if you're going to have you know, a history, that's when you want the team to step up, is when the quarterback is not at his best. So they got that. That's a good way to start for him.
You know, the interesting thing about that game, if you look just at the box score, didn't look at the score, you looked at the Rams with time of possession at 36 and a half minutes, and yeah, they ran 92 plays, and the Dolphins ran 48. The total yards, right, they had 471. The Dolphins had 145. You would have thought that was a blowout, and really, it was the other way around. And I don't think that game was close as the 28-17 lead. How crazy is that?
Yeah, I agree. You know, when you see Goff with 61 attempts, that's a Ben Gay Monday morning right there for sure. And yeah, I agree with you. It came out and looked like it could go either way. Felt like the electricity was on the Rams side. And then things just kind of flipped on a dime, you know, into the second quarter, you know, the end of the first quarter, into the second quarter. And then it just felt like the Dolphins had it on lock. It just felt like they had the mojo.
How close is this to being as excited for just kind of the entire organization? I mean, it really looks like Brian Flores has done a 180 from the team that he took over. And he's got, I mean, last year, the thing that I noticed is that it seemed like the players were playing hard for him every game, even when they were getting their butts kicked. And this time it's kind of translating where he's got a little more talent. And so I almost feel like from top to bottom, everything's going, looking up, and they got a bunch of draft picks coming next year. I mean, how can you quantify for me the level of excitement in South Florida for the Dolphins?
Well, I can't speak for South Florida, although I try many times. And, you know, these are crazy, unprecedented times. But, you know, with my social circle and the folks that I socialize and do business with, we talk about the Dolphins. And, you know, it has been a consensus sort of, the defense has been a sneaker, you know, a whisper. Nobody really, you know, the focus has been on the quarterback, and the defense has done this sort of, you know, silent, humble, diligent, direct, solid job. And they've gained my respect. So, you know, as far as, to be in this season, you know, this crazy COVID times, and then have, you know, with the schedule and the ability for players to, you know, play, don't play, you don't want to play, and diminished stadiums, and just sort of the craziness. I'm excited. And I think most people are. I think having them be, beat the Rams without Tua, you know, carrying the whole load. I think the excitement level is pretty high, at least sure is in this neighborhood in Davie.
So one of the things that I wanted to ask you, and we've had a few conversations here and there about the Dolphins and about Dan Marino. And they, you know, watching the telecast, you know, they flashed to Marino a few times in the stands or in the suites. And the thing that I started thinking about, and you could probably speak to this, how much does his legacy just cast a shadow over every quarterback that has followed him? I mean, it's such a big shadow, but such big shoes to fill.
Yeah. I mean, he's a... you know, Shula brought him in, and Shula's a hero down here, and the family name is a hero, and their steakhouses, may he rest in peace. And, you know, he's a legend. And, you know, Miami's come a long way since those 70s days when Miami Beach was a retirement haven, and there weren't $15 canned beers everywhere. And, you know, it's just the city has evolved. And I think that Marino came in and was quarterback through that time that the city sort of grew up and grew into what its image is today. And so, yeah, Marino has a shadow. You see him around town. People speak fondly about him. He's a philanthropist, and he's active with the Dolphins. You see him on TV, and he's spoken of fondly. And, you know, I don't think, irrespective of who your team is, that crop of quarterbacks that came out with Marino, you know, there was a bunch of talent in there. And whether, you know, he never got his Super Bowl winning ring, but I'm sure he's got most fans' respect, because he was a one of a kind special player in a league of special players.
And he's always been, I always put him up as my favorite quarterback that I've ever seen. Other guys have been more decorated. Obviously the guy that's playing in Tampa right now is pretty good. But to me, the thing that really struck me about Marino, and you kind of touched on it earlier, is that usually quarterbacks come in and they don't, you know, they kind of sputter at the beginning. I mean, I remember Elway in same draft class. He was benched at one point because he just wasn't doing well. Peyton Manning did not do well, but Marino, and I always use him as kind of like the exception, one of the exceptions to the rule. And I really only count three, but Marino was the first one to really come in and just be great from the start. And then the second season, 1984, was that legendary, you know, first 5,000 yard season, which looked like he was playing a different game than everybody else. But yeah. And you know, I mean, just how, you know, you watched it from, you know, from the backyard, how incredible was it to see him really change the game? I mean, cause I rooted for him even in the Pittsburgh days, but then to see him just doing it in Miami, I mean, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, what, you know, when I think of Dan Marino and I try to put him into context in the scheme of my memory and experience of watching him on TV and in person many, many, many times, and socializing with him as well, but that doesn't come into play, is that he was one of those quarterbacks that from the start through his career, it didn't matter how far back the Dolphins were as a fan. If Marino was out there, you had hope and faith and potential for him to pull that game out and for you to win, because he was an arrogant, confident, cocky, talented gunslinger. And if he got in there and he had any amount of time left, then there was still hope. And that's just the greatest feeling. I think that's what any fan wants, because no one wants to see a lopsided victory or your team starting to get, underneath. And he had a way to just snatch the momentum back with one pass or with one trick play or with his calm and his poise and his presence. And you could see what it did to the team, and that filtered out to the fans. And that's a special feeling and a special ability.
And that was the thing. Like when people were talking about Patrick Mahomes a couple years ago, when he just exploded on the league and, every week it seemed like he was throwing for 350 and four touchdowns. And I would tell people, I said, no, what he's doing is just the next iteration of what Dan Marino was doing in 1984. Where it just was ridiculous. I mean, I remember seeing him once on a Monday night football game. I think it was against Dallas. And I think they were trailing by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. And it was like, no problem. It was just Duper to Clayton. It was like, he's playing pitch and catch with those guys. And then they ended up winning by, three touchdowns. And he did it. And it was just, just utterly amazing. Just, phenomenal. And, you and I met on the beaches in Jamaica 28 years ago. And one of the things I've always enjoyed is, in our friendship is like, I've never had anything less than a great time with you. You're one of the funniest people I know. You're one of the funnest people I know. And it's just kind of, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, I just let you let you drive the boat and just, let's go have a good time. But yeah, you mentioned, you got some chances to socialize with Marino. Any, funny stories, to share?
Yeah, most certainly. My favorite and most people's favorite when I get a couple of makers marks in me is I had, a very good friend of mine. I went to high school in Miami and played high school football in Miami, Miami Killian. One of my best friends was recruited by Schnellenberger to go play for University of Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, yes.
And his name is Bobby Gibson, Robert Gibson. He was a linebacker, an inside linebacker. And through him, I met many folks that are still very good friends of mine. When one of them was another linebacker who was a year younger than my friend Gibson, Bobby Gibson, his name was Mark Sander. And Mark ended up playing for the Dolphins for a few years. And back then, I don't know how NFL teams do it now, but how it worked when the team traveled on the team plane is you didn't get assigned to your position or by length of time or tenure on the team. It was just sort of a random assignment. So Mark became seated next to Dan Marino. So Mark and Dan created a friendship, an unlikely friendship, rookie, redneck, backwoods, country, bucolic linebacker from Louisville, with Pittsburgh Dan Marino. But so through Mark's relationship to Dan, I got to know and socialize with Dan a few times. Got to go see George Thorogood with Dan and some other Dolphins when Dan was on crutches because of his Achilles. But when they retired Dan's number, I think in year 2000, and then they had a ceremony a couple of years later, and my friend Mark got was invited to that ceremony. He was living in Louisville, Kentucky. I was living in Chattanooga, Tennessee at the time. And Mark calls me up and he says, Cabeza, I've been invited to go to the retirement of Marino's jacket, to go up on the Wall of Fame, on the stadium. And I've got all these VIP passes and parties and invitations for a weekend of fun. All the 72 Dolphins will be there.
Oh my God.
There'll be a bunch of events. Oh yeah. And a football game. And it's all paid for me and a guest. And he's like, I don't have a girlfriend, and I know you'd be very interested in going. So, you're invited. So of course I went along, and you know, Mark and I proceeded to go to every event and, you know, this country club and this place and to go to this signing ceremony. And then there was the game and we got to sit in the skybox and Mark got his jacket. And then there was a tremendous party, happened to coincide with Dan Marino's birthday party. And so at this country club in Weston was this tremendous party for Dan Marino. And, you know, bars everywhere, open bar, an ice cream machine, an avocado slicing station, a cigar station, an ice luge. You know, you can get anything you want, you can get in here. Just everything, food and a band. Darius Rucker was there, you know, Dolphins of all ages and histories were there. And it was really just a big festive event. And Dan was in a great mood. And so Mark and I had already started enjoying our festive drinking party earlier in the day. And we had been drinking rum and Cokes probably for 2-3 hours before we got to Marino's party. And then we continued drinking rum and Cokes. So, it's Mark's turn to go shag us around the drinks, and we're standing around in a circle talking, listening to the music. I think it was Dan Marino, my buddy Mark Sander, John Offerdahl, I think, was standing there. John Grimsley, who was a linebacker. So was Offerdahl. Offerdahl was a linebacker. Maybe Chuck Bulla, he was a linebacker. Jeff Uhlenink was the center. Burt Widener, he was an offensive lineman. Chuck Klingbaum, may he rest in peace, he was an offensive lineman. We were standing around joking and talking and listening. Actually, I was just kind of a bystander because, you know, I hadn't played and just knew these guys from socializing through Mark. So Mark goes up to get us a round of drinks and he comes back with some Hawaiian tropical blue Windex looking thing with an umbrella in it and all kinds of, you know, circumstance hanging out of it and hands it to me like I'm extra on the Love Boat. And I look at this thing for a second because for hours we've been drinking, you know, Jack and Coke. And I'm like, what is this? And before I can take a sip of it or even process through, you know, what I have in my hand, Dan comes dancing over and goes, what kind of chick drink are you drinking now, Steve? And he gives me a little bitch slap in the face, much to the amusement of the assembled crowd. And, and you know, I had no answer because I hadn't tasted it yet. It looked like adult onset diabetes and acid reflux to me. And so I want to know parts of that. But that story is taken on epic proportions. And now I'll be out socializing somewhere and someone will come up and be like, tell us a story about when Marino bitch slapped you at his birthday party. I'm like, oh, gosh, here we go. Okay. Good times.
So there's a funny side note to that story. I don't know if you know this. And you mentioned Darius Rucker was there. And I heard Darius Rucker is on Dan Patrick like 2-3 times a year. They're good friends. And Darius talks about how much of a Dolphin fan he is. And he actually wanted to name, they had a daughter and he wanted to name her Danielle. Over Dan Marino, but he actually at that weekend that you're talking about, he requested to be in like there was like the hotel they were staying at was like the Dan Marino room, and there was a big picture of Dan Marino it may have been over the bed, and he said that his first his and his wife's first child was conceived that night. So,
that is a subtext to that story that I did not know, because the variable here with Darius Rucker, who I spent more time than I'd ever hoped for socializing with too in the context of that weekend and the days subsequent to it, is that Mark Sander, who, you know, introduced me to the players when he was on the team for that three years or whatever, subsequent to being with the Dolphins and not being able to sign on another NFL team, he was picked up by a team, the Scottish Claymores of the now defunct World League, which was a little brother to the to the NFL. And so Mark was with the Claymores for a couple of years and won a championship ring. And he was the MVP of the game. And while there, ran into Darius Rucker, mentioned the Dolphin connection, and ended up having a rip-roaring good time, to the extent of which I still don't know all the details of what happened that night, and I hope to pry it out of him sooner or later. But we got to spend some time with Darius Rucker too, who, you know, I don't know very well other than a couple of few drunken hours spread over a couple of days. And nice guy, humble, affable, funny, big Dolphin fan for sure. Big friend of Marino's too.
Oh man, I met him one time. He was singing, and Hootie and the Blowfish were playing at Dodger Stadium on opening day in 2006. And then the lady who was going to sing the national anthem, she came down with laryngitis that morning. So Darius kind of subbed in, and I went and interviewed him for about 5 minutes on the field. Just the coolest dude. I mean, in those 5 minutes, he just oozed cool. Just total normal guy who just. Everything just exploded for him. So yeah, it was fun. But yeah, the Darius, it's hilarious that you brought that up, because yeah, the whole Darius story it takes it to another level, man. But hey, you know, you're kind of becoming you're a part or driving a big growing movement through South Florida, you know, the Lauderdale area, now Hollywood, Florida. You know, tell me about Amplification Inc., because I mean, we've talked about it before, but you know, let's pump it up right here, and hopefully this leads to something in the podcast realm for you down the road.
Oh, it most certainly will. I will fill you in. Yeah, and I appreciate you letting me pick your brain. So almost 13 years ago, when I was humbled and hobbled by the 2008 economic collapse, I got laid off from a succession of jobs. And one of them was at the University of Miami Hospital System. I'd spent my career to that point in marketing and advertising and sales. And prior to being let go from the health system, I had, I was an early, a little embarrassed. I was an early user on MySpace, and you know, I was early to LinkedIn. I was early to YouTube. I was fascinated by it. You know, I've never been a coder or a gamer or anyone that's super tech sophisticated, but I just like those platforms. And so when I got laid off from University of Miami Hospital, prior to that, I'd already been sort of acting as a de facto friend, mentor, consultant, helping friends and family that were business owners take their business onto the internet. And so when that happened in 2008, I just pushed in and had a business partner at the time, Marnie, and we started Amplification Inc. And it was meant to be a social media marketing company. That was the buzzword. You know, Facebook was still ascendant and didn't turn into the mammoth, massive Leviathan it is now. And so we started sort of doing this, and you know, it started paying the bills a little bit, and you know, the thinking was I would just do this in 2008 until I found a job. But you know, I didn't know, I don't think many people knew the point of the bottom of those kind of dark times would be. And so it didn't. It continued. Business continued to come our way. I formally incorporated in 2010, and since then the business has continued to grow. And COVID has been a massive positive thing for my bottom line. You know, more companies want to go online. Digital infrastructure is more important than it ever was. E-commerce is more important than it ever was. You know, having an online presence more important than it ever was. And so, you know, I reached out to you because in the scope of what we do, you know, we do everything. We build websites, we do Google AdWords and paid Facebook, we do video production and blogging and Twitter, we do strategy and anything in the digital domain we do. But what I've never done and what I've not touched my toe into, although some members of my team have, is podcasting. So I do have I'm moving into the downtown Hollywood area where both my first client is in the business district, Mickey Burns Irish Pub, and some other clients, including the wonderful Greek Joint Kitchen and Bar, best Greek food in South Florida. And so, yeah, I appreciate you. I reached out to you because I'm going to start a podcast. I've got two members of my team, Jeannie and Quinn, that have experience in podcasting. One of them is doing a podcast now. And so, yeah, that's it makes sense. This is a great landscape. I think that people listening to podcasts of all types has skyrocketed, and it was skyrocketing pre-COVID. I think it's more important now than ever. And one of my, one of my favorite girlfriends, she listens to true crime as she goes to sleep at night, every night, which I don't know why you would do that. Doesn't sound like it's the best thing for sound sleep, but, you know, to each their own. So yeah, that's Amplification Inc. AmplificationInc.com. I appreciate you asking about it and the shout out. Yeah.
Well, you know what, and it's kind of crazy because I've seen the digital explosion in the last decade, and where it was, to me, it started out where it was like you hired a kid fresh out of college, and gave her, him an iPhone and a laptop, and said, here, you do Twitter and Facebook for us. And, but to me, it's really grown. I mean, how have you seen it just really evolve into something where you with 30 plus years of professional experience can really just, pun intended, amplify a company's profile and brand?
Yeah. Well, it always, because my portfolio is broad, right, and varied, many different industries. And so, the key performance indicator or measure of success for the Greek joint kitchen and bar is very much different than, Dr. Valenzuela's rheumatology practice. Each one has a different level of what they consider success to be. And what the most exciting thing for me as a career marketer and career advertising executive, and was in administration in hospitals in the marketing space, University of Miami Hospital and Plantation General, is that what's the best part and what the real secret sauce is and what the real commodity is data. And that's what drives the whole thing. That's what made, Zuckerberg a gazillionaire. And that's why Google matters. And doing this stuff and getting, your content on Instagram or Facebook or sending out tweets is important, but it's equally as important as having the time and the wherewithal, the expertise to take a dive into what the analytics say, because knowing who your customer is and how to reach them and then how they respond once you get your message to them and sort of reel them in like a nice big mahi-mahi is important. So, whether it's doing video production on Facebook or YouTube or on Brandzuka or the other platforms we use, or whether it'll be, the statistics and the demographics and the data associated with podcasting once I put my feet into that water, that's the real important thing, the ability to look at that and constantly calibrate your efforts. You need to figure out what your message is, pay to deploy it, then take a look at the data, then, regroup, calibrate, refocus, deploy again. And it's a never ending cycle because these platforms, much to my frustration, but good to keep my brain supple and nimble and responsive, they change. Like Facebook just changed their platform again, which is very aggravating. If I run into Zuckerberg, I may choke him. But these things, they change. And there's really going to be a bigger change and bigger explosion and bigger disruption because there's already AI mixed in, artificial intelligence, and the platforms all use it. And, I don't know how far away we are from, Schwarzenegger's movies fighting Skynet, hopefully that doesn't happen, but, AI powers everything. So it's a landscape that continually changes. So to be able to be effective, and have your message resonate and reach the right people and be cost effective and efficient takes calibration. So that's what I like the most, tell you the truth, because I get bored easy. And if something is repetitive, then I'm going to want to look for a bridge to jump off of. And I appreciate how it changes, keeps me engaged.
Well, one of the things I know, everybody who follows you on Twitter and Instagram and all the other platforms, I think they're gonna not not be pleasantly surprised because they've already gotten to know you. But everybody out there, familia, this guy is natural. Is going to be a natural. He's going to be. I'm telling you this right now. I'm buying stock in Amplification Inc. for 2021 because this guy's gonna drive it through the roof when he jumps into the podcasting realm. And Joe Rogan and Bill Simmons and all you guys, Gary V, look out because this guy's coming. Hopefully, familia FFB, we can ride the coattails and
I believe a rising tide lifts all boats, so I'd be happy to do that because there's enough to go around for all of us, and your journey up shouldn't be at the expense of someone pushing them down. So that sounds great to me. I'd absolutely love to help out as much as I can, and appreciate your continued guidance, feedback, and mentorship, my friend. Very much appreciated. Love you like a brother, always have.
Oh man, abrazos, hugs, I mean everything, my brother. I mean, I can't wait. I think the next time we do one of these, let's be doing it from a poolside in Vegas. When we got and we'll order something blue that looks like Windex, just and toast it. Jägermeister.
Yeah.
Oh man, well just make sure I'm ahead on the at the blackjack table when the Jägermeister comes so that I'm not
we'll drag Joe along too, and let's realize our aging sexiness and not go to the mimosa buffet at 8 a.m. so we can make it past 2 p.m, please.
Yeah, that'll be. Please, let's not do that. Yes, I want to be singing Sweet Caroline at like 3 o'clock in the morning at some piano bar. And
me too. And then hit that White Castle on the way back again.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And you mentioned Jojo Narduli, our brother from another mother. We love you, brother, baby. The Italian Stallion himself. But my brother, well, Steve, I mean, this has been a blast. This has been a blast. I always love catching up to you live as much as possible. I'm glad we were able to get this down and shoot this out and help us both mutually. Make sure to let everybody know where they can find you on all the socials.
Yeah. So personally, Club Cabeza is where I'm at on Twitter. Same thing on Instagram, Club Cabeza. Amplification Inc. You can find our stuff on our website, amplificationinc.com.
Toast to you, my brother. You know, I'm raising a glass from here. Raising 20 more beers. Mantra from shooter, back in the day. Oh, shooter, high five. But hey, shout out to you. That's it for our show, our special edition of the Familia FFB podcast. Yes, we did talk some football and had a few fun stories, but hey, everybody, make sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Familia FFB. You can find me at Jorge Martin 17 and our Familia FFB Facebook page. And we will. And also all the episodes and all our content are at the FamiliaFFB.com website. Everybody, familia, thank you again. Otra vez, remember, todos somos familia.